Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I've just gotten back from New York, visiting my mom, who is failing. And that evoked a number of memories, more frankly from my father, who died a few years ago, than of my mom. And because this show focuses on work, I thought I would share with you a blog post that I then wrote about that. And by the way, first, if you'd like, this whole hour is devoted to you. There's no guests, so after I do this, I will invite you to call for a 3-minute workover. If you are stuck in any aspect of your career, no matter what your station in life, no matter what your age, I usually can help you get unstuck. And it could be somebody you love, not just you. So get prepared, and in a few minutes I will give out the phone number and you can call in. But in the meantime, I have often written about my dad. And he has, you know, talked about how he's used work to get past his Holocaust memories and how he, of course, used work to afford to move my mom, my sister, and me from the Bronx tenement that we lived with a train roaring 24/7 so none of us could sleep. But in thinking about my mom and her kind of end coming up soon, hopefully it's a few months, but it could be any time. But I flashed on some other things about him. That on reflection really were quite heroic, and maybe they'll inspire you as they continue to inspire me. My dad didn't open his clothing store in one of New York City's poorest neighborhoods because he had a political desire to serve the poor. It was all he could afford. He didn't charge $1 for shirts and $1.98 for Ray-Ban sunglasses. Can you believe it? $1.98? Really, that's what it cost. And that's not just an inflation difference. It's just it wasn't a big brand name back then. He didn't do that because he cared to be kind to the poor. Those were the prices that the market could bear over there. That's it. But even after my dad could afford to move his store to a less dangerous neighborhood, he stayed for 40 years. He stayed even though people would constantly steal from his store. At least twice. I certainly remember twice. My dad was awakened in the middle of the night by the cops. They called to tell him that thieves had broken into the store and emptied it. And then there was a third time that is even more vivid for me. The police called to say that someone broke a window and tossed a lighted kerosene-soaked towel into his store. Half the merchandise was burned, the other half was ruined because of the smoke. Now, those were the anomalies. But every day, my dad had to endure the smell of stale blood from the live chicken market next door, which merged with the smell of deep-fried pork intestines from the deli that was on the other side of my father's store. And then there was the smell of the garbage that people would throw into the street all the time. So often, in addition, he had to endure unfair customers. The most vivid memory I had, I used to help my dad out in the store on Saturdays. And I remember one guy who for about, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 minutes, who remembers, he was trying on suit after suit, asking my father a question about this, question about that, about the suit, can you do this, and that. Anyway, all the other customers, it was Saturday, it's a really busy time, and all these other customers are waiting. My father, of course, was a nervous guy. And after all of that, the guy said he couldn't afford the $25 for the suit and asked if my father would sell it to him for 10 bucks. My father, he always tried to stay polite. He said, the best I could do was $20. What'd the customer do? He giggled and pranced out of the store laughing. My father had to deal crap with like that for 40 years. He kept his store open from 8:30 in the morning. By the way, yeah, the lesson is the customer always right? I think that's one of the stupidest phrases that has ever been created. In any event, my father kept his store open from 8:30 in the morning until 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. That means he had to leave the house. He couldn't afford a car for a long time. So he'd have to take a bus, a train, and a 6-block walk. And remember, this is New York, not here. Rain, snow, or shine, which means he had to leave the house at 7 in the morning. And then he'd do that, of course, on the way back from work. And then on many Sundays, he would go to the Lower East Side, where they would sell merchandise, you know, where he could, that he could buy for the store. And he would be, I still picture him with his hands full of like boxes that were lashed together with string, like three boxes in one hand and a little handle, and three boxes in the other. And he was carting them back to his store on Sundays. And yet my father stayed there for 40 years, serving that community, providing them basic products, things they really needed, at an affordable price. And he provided like services that are unheard of today. For example, he would do alterations for his customers, for free. He had the sewing machine in the back, and he did the work when business was slow. I really think that small shopkeepers who, like my dad, have endured everything from ongoing robbery to ongoing stench and kept on serving the poor with integrity are far more worthy of praise than the politicians, the athletes, the pop culture stars that we genuflect before. So that's a little ode, not just to my dad, but to all of you who are quietly, whether you're serving the poor or the rich, doesn't matter. But if you are doing more than just putting in your 37 and a half or 40 hours and you're not getting paid overtime and you're putting the time in, maybe because it's expected, but maybe because you just think it's the right way to live, to be productive. Tip of the cap to you here on Work with Marty Nemko. Okay, now as promised, I'm devoting most of this show to you. I have a bunch of tips and tricks and things that I want to share with you, but I want to make sure that we have a maximum time to address your questions about your work life. So if you or someone you love is stuck in any aspect of your career, either you're unemployed, underemployed, well-employed, but unhappy for other reasons, a lousy boss, lousy coworker, simply an existential angst, which I must admit I'm no stranger to, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, Ford, I call the three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, and they are coming in, I have a number of these tips that I want to share with you. One, I just found very helpful explaining to a client why networking works so much, so well. If you ask somebody, say, I want to work for you, it's like you're pushing yourself on them. It puts you in a very one-down position. It makes you, in the best case, makes you seem less than, I don't know about word desperate or needy, but certainly less than if somebody else touts you. If somebody else touts you, then, you know, it's like you're this great guy who's getting touted. So if you are looking for better work or even in an avocation, like let's say you want to sing or perform somewhere or hang your art in a restaurant or whatever, rather than you selling it, make a list of all the people who really like you and ask yourself which of them could tout you? And it's really good if by any chance a person who would tout you to somebody who could hire you whom that hire, that employer, respects. So in other words, if John is my friend and John knows Mary, who's the boss, if Mary and John and Mary respect each other, if John says to Mary, you know, I really think you should hire Marty, then that's going to mean a whole lot because already Mary respects John. That's why it's so valuable to use your network to get a job, because you will not appear desperate. You will appear like a desired person. All right, all the lines are lighted up, so let me go right to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Is that me?
It is.
Oh, good morning, Marty. Thank you. This is Lark. How are you doing?
Hi, Lark. I'm well. What gives me the honor of the call today?
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I did turn on the show a little late, but I heard your wonderful talk about your father.
Thank you.
And just a quick, it's nothing deep, but isn't that, unfortunately, at least I feel so, the society that no matter how much we say, oh, we definitely want our child to be a straight-A student, if they're the star football player, they're probably going to be happier. Or if they grow up to be the star quarterback for the Niners, they're probably going to be happier than if they're like a whatever it might be. So isn't that just kind of part of our society?
Well, Locke, unfortunately, there are many parents, though, who will genuflect and get really excited about good grades, as well as those who would be great, who would be excited about sports. But are there many people who would really be excited if their children, for example, decided to open a crummy little shop in the poorest neighborhood of Brooklyn?
No, but my point is that even if they do genuflect to great grades, in other words, I actually work in a place where a lot of parents and the students do great, doesn't matter where, and it's with the public. And these families, their students do really well, little kids. But they are more excited, I'm telling you, when their little, like, Joey or Mary is the star, whatever it might be, the star footballer, ran the race the fastest, or was the star in the dance review, whatever.
Right.
There's something more excited in them than their straight A's.
Well, with good reason in some ways. Now, I always like to take the other side. The reality is that sports is more fun than geometry. And dancing is more fun than physics equations. And so it is more fun to see your son or daughter in a play.
Or be
a star football player than seeing them know how to balance equations. Anyway, Locke, I thank you for the call.
I agree. I'm just saying I think that's part and parcel of what you talked about. But
okay.
Thank you.
Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's you.
Hello.
Hi.
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 Well, firstly, let me extend my condolences about your mother.
She hasn't died yet, but I'm not betting on her lasting 6 months for sure.
Well, either way, I was actually calling about my own mother, who recently retired after 30 years in an admissions kind of administrative capacity at the university, and she is struggling with kind of where her career is at. She's taken another position that she's not satisfied with at all. I recommended that she should maybe start like a blog. You got 30 years of valuable experience, you know, in this field, maybe address those things. And she wants me to kind of help walk her through that. And the truth is, I have no idea if that's even the right move or like how to do that.
Well, it depends. First of all, if she likes the idea, as many older people do, of kind of leaving a legacy. There's a term that Eric Erickson coined called transgenerativity. When people reach their 50s, 60s, or 70s, they start to become aware of their mortality, and they want to, you know, they can't live forever, but they can at least leave a legacy. And so for some people, especially those for whom writing is a useful way of communicating, as it is for me, I'm an addicted blogger, if that's true for your mom, then certainly that's a good idea, but you shouldn't necessarily, just because you suggested it, unless rarely really are, you know, it could be, but most administrative assistants are not, you know, that interested or that good in writing.
Well,
is she a writer?
She's not an administrative assistant. She was the dean of admissions at a university.
Oh, okay, great. So, yes, a blog is a great way to both leave the legacy as well as potentially lay the foundation either for speaking engagements, for a book, etc. As long as she focuses obsessively, in my judgment, on not stating the obvious. There have been so many books written about college admissions that are kind of almost cliched in a way. You know, write your essay about how you help the less fortunate, or, you know, the competition is really terrible. I feel really sorry for all the kids who work so hard, you know, to get in. All those are true, but they've been said 10,000 times. Yeah. So if she can focus her blog on aspects either of her life, of what really life is behind the ivy, which, by the way, would be a great name for her blog, Behind the Ivy, then it will be more rewarding and she'll feel she's leaving something unique rather than just another tome on the art of getting into college. Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
And now, in terms of, it's so easy, thanks to WordPress.com. WordPress.com is a free thing. Just go to WordPress.com, and it's very, in 5 minutes, you can she can have her blog up and running, and it doesn't require a computer, a super genius. Now, one other thing that was suggested by my engineer, Joanne Marr, and I'm a little cynical, but she's suggesting she could write about where she made a difference. Now, I'm not ultimately convinced that college admissions officers make much difference, because those students on the margin who could get in or not get in, they're usually fairly indistinguishable. And she may have lucked out, and some of her students that she made a choice, okay, this one's getting in, may have turned out better. And in fact, she may not even be making most of those admissions choices. She's more, usually deans of admission are more marketing directors who deal with the creating cool brochures and exciting websites and training the salespeople, the admissions counselors to hype. So I'm not convinced that talking about how she changed lives is going to be the best answer. But insider stuff behind the Ivy using WordPress may be a good way to go. Make sense?
Very much so, and I greatly appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. And I'm doing, for those of you who are wondering what this is Work with Marty Nemko. I am doing 3-minute workovers on you, my dear caller. So if you or someone you love is stuck, my job is to help you get unstuck. Whatever your career conundrum is, I can usually at least help you take a baby step forward. The phone number here for such a 3-minute workover, and I promise not to pummel you, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Yes. So I'm in a job where I'm very detail oriented. And so there's all that work that's focused on details, and also on the size of all these.
Is your phone, is your radio turned down? I'm hearing echoing.
Yes, no, it's turned down. It's off.
Thank you. Continue.
Okay. So beyond detail, you know, all the detail work, there's also all the fires that the office one has to deal with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So my issue is organizational skills and dealing with everything and making sure everything is delivered on time.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I also would like to get a read on is, so I'm all the time looking at the trees, and I'd like to take a step back and get a more strategic view of things. So those are the two aspects I was hoping to get some help with.
Great. Let me take a quick guess on the organizational skills. Once you start to fall behind, it's like, remember the old, by any chance, the old Lucy show where she's putting donuts or whatever on a conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt keeps getting faster and faster, and eventually all the donuts pile up, and she's overwhelmed by it all. It's the same with organization. The as soon as you start to let things pile up, it becomes overwhelming and you just want to give up. So the key really is to try to, unless your boss is just giving you an unrealistic amount of work, and in which case you can't catch up like the conveyor belt in the Lucy show. But if it is a reasonable amount of work, the key is and it's easier said than done. If you procrastinate, party's over. But if you say, it'll feel so good to get this off my to-do list, it'll make me feel less guilty, I'll feel so much better, I won't be overwhelmed, to just stay on it, slow, not rush. Rushing doesn't help anybody, but slow and steady and not falling behind. Is that realistic in your situation, or is that not realistic or not going to solve your problem?
Well, my issue seems to be more that I'm that detail-oriented person. I seem to want to get things more perfect than need be. And so I tend to work to make sure that the product is to my standard before I let go.
Got it.
And that seems to get me behind. And also there's just the missing deadlines because things pop up and the fires get started and some things slip through the cracks.
Okay, a couple of thoughts there. Maybe the most potent tool that you can have in that regard is to have a little voice on your shoulder that is always asking you, is this the most time-effective way to do this? Meaning, sometimes really getting it really perfect to your high standards is worth the time. In other words, it is worth letting other deadlines fall. It is worth your getting stressed. Other times, it's not. But you just like you don't drive a car at the same speed all the time. Sometimes you go fast and sometimes you go slow. Do you need to be more nuanced in the way in which you approach each task and say, is this the right speed, the right level of perfectionism for this task? Would that help?
That would help a lot.
Okay, cool. And of course, that will then help you from missing those deadlines and things falling between the cracks. That notion of thinking of you having this voice on your shoulder saying, How perfect does this need to be? Just like the car metaphor. Do I need to drive at 5 miles an hour here, or do I need to drive, can I drive at 70? Okay, let's turn to, you said you also want to think more strategically and a bigger picture. So you're in, I'm assuming from that you'd like to change careers to something quite different from what you're doing now. Is that correct?
Well, so I have a very good base, and I know the details, but I want to get that more strategic view and think it more at a more strategic level than I currently am. I'm down deep with the numbers these days.
Got it. So what you're saying is you want to stay in the same field, but instead of being in the weeds, you want to, as you to use your term, be in the trees. Look at the you're getting over. It's kind of feeling empty, being this little cog in the wheel who's just simply looking at spreadsheets and the like. Is that correct?
I'd like to move up.
Okay. Correct. What field are you in?
Business planning.
I'm sorry, business planning?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me, what that can mean many different things. Tell me what that means.
So I'm working on business plans, three-year business plans, 10-year business plans for the business unit within a major corporation.
Okay. So you are an employee of a corporation, and you're developing their business plans in various different work divisions, work units, et cetera. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. But right now you have it sounds like you're not really responsible for the larger decisions about, you know, how to allocate money, where to put the, you know, what kind of product, what features and benefits. You're more in the implementation phase once those bigger decisions are made. Is that correct?
Well, what I do is I gather all the numbers for all the projects and roll them up together and take a look at things as to what our needs are financially for 3 years.
I see. So it's more forward. Like whether you've got the money to, whether there's enough money to do these these plans. Okay, great. Have you the two things? Have you either created some samples of what kind of that would? Samples of the kind of strategic thinking you'd like to do. So that, for example, if you're working for HP and you notice that they used to rely a tremendous amount on their inks to generate money, but now, you know, third-party vendors are creating cartridges at a tiny fraction of the cost, and so they're losing a lot of revenue. Have you created, for example, a sample alternative model for replacing ink money? And if you showed those kind of samples, maybe two or three is usually the magic number, three such samples of really good strategic thinking, either to your boss, because you usually don't want to violate chain of command, maybe to your boss. Have you done that, first of all, or have you had the conversation with your boss about what you need to do in order to move from your very tactical role to a more strategic role?
And that is what I would like help with. Doing that transition, so no, I haven't had that discussion.
Okay, so for me, what I would do is it's always better to show, don't tell. So what I would do is I would, on my own, create one or two, not the major things, these should be one-pagers, one-page examples of the kind of strategic thinking you could do around some existing problem that exists within your company. And then show it to your boss, say, you know, you spend a long time kind of in the weeds, the number-crunching guy. You like to think of yourself as somebody who thinks more strategically, not just so tactically. And so you've played around with a couple of these one-page mini strategic plans. And Mr. or Ms. Boss, what do you think of them? And if he or she criticizes them and said, this is bad, you say, great, thank you so much. Would you mind if I revise them and show them to you again? And at the point when he or she is saying, great, then you say, well, what do I need to do to go from what I'm currently doing to a job where I can be spending at least some of my time doing the strategic work? That's how I would proceed. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Marty. Appreciate that.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. And my pleasure would be to help you, my dear listeners. If you or someone you love has got a career problem, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, nonprofit, for-profit, whether you're 16 or 76, I love hard problems. Feel free to call for what I call a 3-minute workover. I will try to help you out. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And between while we're waiting for calls, I have, as I said, I've been collecting these ideas. Every time I get an idea that I think would be worthy of you, I jot it down in a file. And then when the file gets too fat, I bring it in. And so here is another of those thoughts. Everybody starts out with, you know, good intentions to change it, you know, their behavior or their attitude or whatever. But then in the middle of life, we tend to forget. We just get swallowed up by life's exigencies. So if you really want to lock in some new attitude or new behavior, you've got to actually change the memory neurons in your brain so it stays top of mind. You've got to say and then write that new attitude or new behavior and why you want to do it. And then at least three times a day, and here's the part that's a little unique to me, don't read it. Keep paraphrasing it, because if you paraphrase it, it will. Your mind is more active. It's more likely to actually those memory neurons to change. If you simply read it, it could be kind of like the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, you say it, but you're not even. It's not even penetrating your brain what you're saying. So, if you want to lock in a new attitude or a new behavior, say and or write that and why you want to do it, and then at least three times a day until it's locked in, keep paraphrasing what you've said or written, not reading it. Okay, now our lines all are lighted up, so let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi.
Yes, hi. I had a question. My sister has been out of work just for a couple months, but I'm wondering if she needs to finish getting her BA. She actually spent 4 years in college, but only came out with an AA mm-hmm. because she switched around. She's in commercial design, and she doesn't want anything to do with architecture, but she's been stalling in her career, and she's been getting advice that she doesn't actually need a degree because she has experience that has made it so that a degree is not as important.
Yeah, I agree pretty much. Yeah, I do.
You agree?
Absolutely. Because especially, you know, yes, there are some jobs, some large corporations or government agencies that have rigid rules. You must have this degree. But very often, especially in a field where there can be a portfolio, as in the case of design, nobody cares about the degree at all. And in fact, if it took her 4 years to get an AA, it could take her, remember, the upper division
right.
courses could be even harder. It could take her 6 years to get
yeah.
the BA. The opportunity cost, meaning what she could have otherwise been doing with the time, and not to mention the money, is too great. I would agree that if she's been out of work a couple of months, it either means she's not searching for a job hard enough, not using her network well enough, not making cold contacts enough, or her portfolio isn't good enough. Maybe
right.
she needs to up her skills. You know, just because she's in commercial design doesn't mean she's good in commercial design. If somebody is really good, they get hired usually pretty quickly. So she needs to get some really, really candid feedback from respected people about the quality of her portfolio. That's what I would do, not look at finishing her bachelor's degree. Make sense?
I think so. Do you think it makes her less competitive against other people who might have a degree?
That's not the
really
point.
It doesn't matter. Okay.
It matters, but doesn't matter 4 or 6 years worth. It's too
right.
much time and money relative to the benefit. Sure, if we could wave a magic wand and she has a bachelor's degree, it helps. But it doesn't help enough to justify the time. Better for her to spend, if her skills aren't that great, spend another 3 months getting her skills up to speed in whatever it is that's required to be a great commercial designer. Those 3 months and the time and money involved in that are very, you know, there's no guarantees in life, but
right.
statistically are far more likely to help her than taking a course on the Peloponnesian Wars at San Francisco State.
Right. What about if it was only 2 years she was able to get a degree? Still not worth it?
I would make that my plan C. My
okay.
plan A would be to, you know, get some feedback on the portfolio now, try really hard to get a job, and then if not, then maybe she, you know, she might take a course or two courses. I don't give up 2 years of my life, let alone four. And believe me, statistically, people who took 4 years to get an AA when they were younger, now to try to get a bachelor's degree, statistically, most of them take more than 2 years. They take,
okay.
and even 2 years in my mind is not worth it in general, without knowing her, but all things being equal, that's my opinion.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry to disagree with you, but I agree with your sister.
Okay,
take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's you.
Hi, I have a question regarding references for a freelance profession. I'm going into bookkeeping.
Okay.
I started this about 6 months ago, my service. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten two clients just from networking, so networking does work.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I actually interviewed with them, and we talked about my background. I have a corporate background,
mm-hmm.
and they did call my references, which were fine, and actually got the client services.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I've been advertising on, like, Craigslist and other freelancing services.
Mm-hmm.
And getting calls and emails from individuals who are asking for references right up front without meeting me. And I don't feel comfortable giving you my references,
right?
Because these are high-profile people that I'm...
Right, absolutely. No, that's inappropriate. No, they have a right. If it's a, you know, you can certainly say, for example, if you're getting... a lot of requests, you might want to ask your references. Say, I really don't want to bother you constantly with references. These are for just little freelance jobs. Would you mind writing me a letter and I will send those letters? Or if it's a little crappy job, you can explain to the potential client, you know, because I'm a freelancer, I have lots and lots of different, you know, clients. I can't keep hitting up my references for the time. So let's spend a few minutes chatting on the phone. And if it feels right, I'm not asking you to commit to, you know, 100 hours worth. Try me out for an hour or two. And then if you don't like me, you've risked very little.
That sounds good.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. Yes. My sister, we have many siblings, is probably going to be the one to take care of my father, who is
mm-hmm.
old and
right.
in need of care now.
Right.
And we've been looking into a personal care agreement, setting it up so she can get compensated. We're not exactly sure who's going to be paying it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm interested in is trying to figure out structuring it so that there's the long-term career, what the long-term career implications can be for her, so that it's just not something that
mm-hmm.
helps my dad and gives her some money while
Good
she's
point.
There, but also has something in the long run. She has a BA in communications.
Great.
She actually did public radio for a while.
Okay.
But for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, she was doing AV for hotels
right.
and hated it and ultimately left the job because it was an awful job.
Yeah, for the people who don't know what that means, AV for hotels means you're setting up the LED projectors and the microphones and that stuff.
Right. And so she was out of work. My dad needed help. He's been in and out of the hospital. And they all live back on the East Coast, but the family is far flung across the United States, so we're kind of all trying to work on different aspects
yep.
of this for her. But I really... I want to make sure that we can think about the career implications
yep.
for her in this.
Here's what I would do. Given that she has a bachelor's in communication, done some public radio, what I'd have her do is to create a podcast of all lessons learned about the art of caregiving. Whether if she'd rather, if her mode of communication or choice is verbal, I would have her do a podcast. If it was if it's writing, I'd have her do a blog. And then afterwards, she now has a very tangible evidence of how she could be a supervisor. You know, there are many of these agencies. Unfortunately, the boomers' parents are getting old. And there are a lot of agencies that need managers and directors and vice presidents. And if she can show her intelligence of, you know, and in the moment, you know, all these day-to-day insights that she's had, I think that would be the greatest selling tool in the world for helping her land a meaningful job in that field. Make sense?
Yeah, yeah. She also, I think the podcast would be a really good idea because she has wanted to do voiceovers for a long time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, with her AV experience and the public radio experience and her bachelor's in communication and wanting to make a career out of this, it seems like that's a slam dunk.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for
thanks
the call.
Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I am doing 3-minute workovers for most of the hour. So if you or someone you love is stuck, this is a great time to call because, you know, very often most shows I have a guest and we try to cram in the calls in about 20 minutes or whatever. But this is your time. So you won't have to wait on hold forever. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco for a 3-minute workover. If you or someone you love is stuck career-wise, or even semi-related to career. Very often your personal issues get in the way of your career success. That is also very fair game for you to call. I can often be helpful on the personal dimension as well. Phone number 415-841-4134 here at KALW, 415-841-4134. Before I go back to the phones, let me offer another of these tips that I've been collecting for you. School is something that can either give a false sense of confidence or a false sense of loserhood. The skills that are required to be good at school are so different than those in the real world. School is highly structured. No real-world job is as structured as school is. School requires a high degree of abstract learning and ability to learn all kinds of, read incredible amounts of material in short amounts of time. That's not at all what's required in many jobs. So either it can give you school success, can give you a false sense of confidence, or if you did badly in school, it can give you a false sense of loserhood. School success does not predict life success. So that's good news for you. If you were crappy in school, it doesn't mean you're going to be failing in life. And just because you were great in school, you may have a PhD from Harvard. We all know that there are plenty of PhDs from Stanford, Berkeley, and Harvard who are failures. What you need to do is figure out apart from doing school well, you've got to, if you did well in school, it means you usually have good learning skills, good reasoning skills, good diligence skills, but you usually need a lot of structure. If you have done well in school and done badly in life, it usually means you need a work structure that is more like school, with a lot of work, a lot of learning required fast, and a highly structured environment. Let's go. Now all the lines are lighted up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. I'm a 61-year-old guy, and working in car sales in the Bay Area right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in doing this for about 6 years.
Yep.
Also an automotive writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough industry, and I deal with some post-Lyme disease issues, so it takes everything I have to be successful at what I'm doing.
Right.
And previously, I was a broadcast journalist for 8 years. I owned my own businesses and ran those for 8 years. I was also a nonprofit administrator, so I've lived, you know, kind of a generalist who goes in and figures stuff out. I've gone into the automotive industry and figured that out. But is there an easier way to make a living for someone like me at 61 to actually get a job where I can make a living? I tried automotive writing. That was an easier way to make a living as far as my body goes, but it's hard to monetize that.
Exactly. What I would do is, you know, there is this enormous boon over the last few years, and it's true even here at KALW, people donating their cars to nonprofits, and there are umbrella organizations that handle all the logistics. I'm wondering, given your communication skills, your automotive background, your car knowledge, whether you should be working for one of those nonprofits, especially if you've got nonprofit values, you work for a nonprofit. I'm wondering, you know, if you're in new car sales, there's an endless pressure to meet quotas. You're dealing constantly with customers who are, you know, pumping you, and then they go and they, you know, shop somewhere else online or whatever. It's a pain in the butt. So I'm wondering whether you might look to those umbrella organizations that handle used car donations and see whether some combination of your writing skills, perhaps your persuasion skills, your nonprofit values might be an easier way for you to make your living.
Great. I'll look into that. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi, it's you. It is you.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I have a daughter that just graduated from the Houston system with a communication psychology double major. And I'm wondering what avenue you think would be best suited for her to look for a job in Silicon Valley. People have thrown out PR work, HR work.
Right.
And I'm just wondering what ideas you have.
Yeah, she is the most generic college graduate.
I think she has a triple major, communication psychology and unemployment.
Exactly, right. Well, that's the problem, unfortunately. We have so bought the line that everybody needs to go to college, and so we've got 72% of all high school graduates go to college, and so many of them major in these kind of soft fields like communication and psychology and a bachelor's, and so they're really generic. They don't stand out unless if they went to Stanford, it's one thing, but you wouldn't be calling. If they had a degree from Stanford. So what you need, she's going to get hired really because of relationships. Somebody's going
to,
in 100, because her resume is going to create one reaction from employers, a yawn. They will just yawn because everybody's going to see it. So she must network her butt off. She must, whatever her, networking comes in different flavors. If she already has a lot of friends who are working there, fine. She should be hanging out with them, going out for coffee, talking intimately with them, all that stuff. If she doesn't, she should be going to whatever works for her, clubs, bars, alumni events, coming to public events that are put on by the company. There are all these women, endless numbers of women's networking organizations. I am sad that men's organizations are not allowed, but there are tons of women's networking organizations. For example, Women in Technology is a major organization for women in Silicon Valley. There's Business Women's Associations, endless. So whatever her way, LinkedIn, of course, if she's a more of a computerish person, connecting on LinkedIn, getting involved in discussion groups in whether it is HR or PR or whatever. She can take individual courses, intensive workshops by Shroom. Shroom is the Society for Human Resource Management. They are the umbrella organization. She should join the local chapter. She should get active. She could get involved on the program committee, which is helping people choose, helping the organization choose speakers. All of that kind of stuff is going to be the way in which she is going to get her Launchpad job. Make sense?
All right. Well, yeah, we do already have her connecting informational interviews with some people in HR position or even LinkedIn, somebody we know. So I guess that's the best avenue. And she is completely bilingual, too.
That helps.
Yeah.
Bilingual.
Okay, I think it's the same thing you're telling me, I'm thinking.
But it's got to be more. Too many, I like to be, as you can tell, I like to be positive where I can, but too often college graduates live in their delusional world that they think a job will come with only a relatively small amount of work. With as generic a background as she has, it is going to be a major effort. It's not just going, doing a little networking here and there. It really is. That's why I ticked off so many different things, because it normally, she's going to be expected to work 40-plus hours a week when she gets hired. She needs to work 40-plus hours a week in networking if she has any really chance. A few informational interviews ain't, it could happen, but statistically the odds are against her. So she needs to make her search for a job a full-time job.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Namco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi. Yes, it is you.
Oh, hi. My name is Roger. I have an immigration law practice in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for about 15 years. And my question is, do you have any advice on how I could expand? I mean, I've been thinking for the past 3-4 years of hiring an attorney and so on and so forth. But, there's just that... that anxiety about, you're going to stretch yourself, you're going to put on somebody on the payroll, and you got to pay this guy, X amount of dollars. What happens if he doesn't produce or she doesn't produce?
Right.
Just wanted to hear your ideas about someone.
Well, the fact that you're resistant to it suggests you'd like an alternative. I mean, there's obviously, if you are really good at hiring, you can get somebody really awesome. And I'd be happy to take a few minutes now to teach you the art of hiring so that, no guarantees, but it can greatly increase your chance of finding somebody great. But if you'd rather not hire somebody, I can go another direction. You want me to teach you how to be a great hirer, or do you want me to give you an alternative to hiring?
Give me an alternative to hiring.
Okay. We obviously are going to have comprehensive immigration reform. There's no question that is Obama's number. I've said this for years. I'm glad I was kind of ahead of the curve on this.
Yeah.
We are going to have comprehensive immigration reform, and that is going to create all kinds of legal questions and legal issues. I would try to get you either hired as a contractor by the government. Find out now. I'd want you to read the current versions of the immigration laws that are being proposed. See where there is going to be areas of where they will need outside lawyers, where you have particular expertise that could help. Because if you have the government as a customer, as they are the best customer to have. They pay the most, they pay reliably, and that will enable you to make more money without working hard or without hiring somebody. Make sense?
That's an excellent idea. Didn't even think of it. Thanks a lot.
Very good. You're welcome. And like I said, you're listening to Work with Marty Namco here on KALW. I am devoting most of the hour to 3-minute workovers. Whatever your career-related problem, I can usually help. If you or someone you love is stuck, either practically doesn't know what to do, is emotionally having a hard time getting on in gear, whether clerk or CEO, 16 or 76, I usually can help you take a baby step forward. So call in with your career conundrum for a 3-minute workover. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go back to the phones, he kind of made me think that maybe many of you are in a position to theoretically hire well. We all know how difficult it is to hire somebody good, and you pay a huge price if you hire somebody bad. It's not just the cost of recruiting and retraining another person, but like the frustration of dealing with a bad employee, and yes, unfortunately, very possibly, the cost and stress of a wrongful termination suit, whether it's legitimate or not, the depositions, the legal costs, the stress, being called names, etc. So it's far better an ounce of prevention, that is, the ounce of prevention meaning hiring wisely, is really worth a pound of cure. So here is my best advice about how to hire. I'll give you kind of a five-minute lecture on it. First of all, initial screening. Unfortunately, job applicants may not be what they seem. They may have hired somebody to write their cover letter and resume. And even if they did their own work, they may have lied or exaggerated, which CNN, there was a survey done by CNN, a joint survey by CNN and CareerBuilder. They found that there's a tremendous amount of lying and exaggeration on applications. So if you're an employer, you are in a minefield. How do you get around the minefield? Create your pool of applicants, not by placing an ad on Craigslist or anywhere else, but by soliciting referrals from your colleagues, from your friends. Those people are unlikely to refer a clunker to you. Very, very, very important. Also, have all applicants include a work sample, a report they wrote, a business plan, software they developed. If they're a teacher, video of a lesson they taught. A work sample is critical. Sure, they could hire somebody to do it, but at least it's an initial screen. It doesn't cost you much to take a quick look at the work samples. Make it a brief work sample. Also, I would have my applicants take a brief, I don't want to be unfair to my applicants either, but a brief online assessment, like which would be a simulation of a key task that's required on that job. And again, you want to make sure, because there is so much cheating in these desperate times, people will do whatever it takes to get a job. So to ensure that the applicants are doing their own work on that online assessment, make sure that the job announcement says that the candidates who get chosen to be interviewed are going to be asked to do a similar simulation task in person. Now, some employers now are even using outside firms to develop assessments like that. If that's not your thing, you might want to do it. I was just reading the New York Times. Tom Friedman wrote about some company called HireArt, H-I-R-E-A-R-T, HireArt.com. Then I was reading in LinkedIn this guy, Adam Grant, he's a Wharton professor. He touted another company like that called Optimize Hire. And then I was reading Forbes, and they touted something called HireView, but it's spelled funny, H-I-R-E-V-U-E. They, for example, they created programming contests to screen applicants for high-tech jobs. So it's critical to have your applicants provide an online sample. Now, we get to interviewing. Interviews are notoriously invalid. There was, for example, there was in Psychological Bulletin, there was a summary of 85 years of personnel selection research across 500 different fields, and they found unequivocally that job interviews predict job performance poorly. Here are some tips that can help improve the validity of the interviews that you do. Ask each applicant the same questions. Not only is that, you know, that ensures that you're not being racist or sexist in the way in which you're asking different people questions, but it enables you to compare people fairly because you're giving them, there's a common standard. Everybody's getting the same questions. But of course, you want to have a measure of flexibility. So at the end of the interview, yes, ask one or two questions that's specific to that applicant. Okay? And importantly, devote most of the interview time not to stupid questions like, tell me something about yourself or tell me your greatest weakness or a problem you solved. Those are totally coachable. You want to devote most of the time in your interviews to job simulations. So, for example, let's say you're hiring a manager. It's the most common position. Have each candidate run a simulated meeting, brief, 5-10 minutes, in which they lead a discussion for 3 minutes. They explain a concept or a product or whatever in 2 minutes. And then some part of that little simulated meeting, they should be trying to motivate the team to do some kind of a tough project. That is a great, valid way. Nothing's perfect, but each one of these tips is a way of increasing your odds that the person you hire is going to be good. Now, here are a few other interview questions that are less BSable because there's no obvious right answer, but they can yield critical information. Some of these came from this guy, Lou Adler. I don't remember. He wrote a book about getting hired. Anyway, this is a good question. Here are 6 tasks. How enthusiastic would you be about spending a chunk of each work week on tasks like that? And what you want to do is you want to include 3 of the 6 that are key to the job and 3 that aren't. That way, if the candidate's really enthusiastic about all six, it's not for sure, but it could mean that the candidate's responses are not being, he's not being honest or she's not being honest. Another good question to ask that's not coachable, or you can't even figure out what the right answer is in advance. Some people are happiest as part of a team. Other people are happy mainly working on their own. Which works better for you? Well, so if this particular job is going to require a lot of teamwork, and the person that really like to work alone as a misfit. Now, of course, you know, the savvy job seeker will look at the job announcement and be able to get a sense of things. But, you know, nothing is perfect, but it will help. Another example of a good question. Are you motivated mainly by money, difficult tasks, working on a team, an inspirational boss, or doing good for the world? And you want to make sure that the candidate's answers match what you can offer. You may not be able to offer a lot of money, but maybe you're making a big difference in the world or vice versa. Another question is a good one. What did you like best and least about your previous bosses? That can help you ascertain whether that person is likely to be a good fit for this particular boss. Another kind of a subset of that question is, a boss can be a close monitor or laissez-faire. With which type do you work better? I'll stop there. Another thing. This is important, too. For most professional-level jobs, intelligence is considered a dirty word, but in reality, intelligence is critical. Indeed, intelligence and drive are far more important, and this is not me saying this, the research data is clear. Intelligence and drive are generally, for most jobs, I'm not talking about a very technical job like computer programmer, but for most jobs, especially managerial jobs, you should prioritize intelligence and drive over skills and experience. The Harvard Business Review wrote an article that said, quote, this I do remember, IQ remains the best predictor of managerial success, end quote. So you might want to give the candidates you interview a test of reasoning, or sometimes they call it cognitive functioning, sometimes they call it intelligence. There's an example of one that's used a lot in the workplace called the Wonderlic, Wonderlic, the Wonderlic Contemporary Cognitive Ability Test. You also might want to, and this is something I got from Adam Grant, that guy I mentioned before, at Wharton professor. You might want to also give a brief measure of initiative. There's something called the Situational Judgment Test of Personal Initiative, because that drive thing is so important. But I need to warn you, this is really important. The Obama administration has dramatically increased the number of what they call disparate impact lawsuits. They not just those that they file, but there is ways that they pressure, they encourage, let's just say that, disparate impact lawsuits. That means suits that are brought about on the basis that even though it appears to be racially neutral policy, that if it has, it results in fewer African-Americans or Latinos being hired, then there is a big burden of proof on the employer to provide validational data that indeed that test was very much job-related, a business necessity, that there would be no other criterion that could be used. So especially if you're worried about that kind of thing, and many employers should, you have to be careful before using intelligence tests or any kind of cognitive functioning tests. Okay, after the interview, it is really important. You can't give much weight to references that the candidate provides. Even the worst-seeming candidate could probably come up with great references. You want to speak with other people at the candidate's previous employers. And when you speak to them, it's all in how you word it. Describe the position. Say you'd really appreciate that person's opinion on whether the candidate would be excellent because it's an important job. That's going to increase your chance of getting a candid response. And even if the person says there's a policy, we can't give references, their tone can be instructive. If they're really bubbly and they say, oh, we can't give out references. Oh, but yeah, Mary worked here. She left voluntarily. That says one thing. She says the same words. We cannot give out references, but Mary did work here and left voluntarily. That says the exact opposite. You can learn, you know, nothing is sure, but you're getting potentially useful data point. If possible, offer the winning candidate a trial employment period, because you can use all these strategies. It's still no slam dunk. The candidate's going to work out. And once the person's given an ongoing position, they don't call them permanent anymore, but an ongoing position, terminating that person can be very difficult. especially in the public sector. So if you can give, if you can get the person to do a week's trial, even a day's trial, it would be invaluable insurance in most cases. So one more thing I want to say. I think that all that stuff's going to help you really increase. There's no guarantees, but definitely help you choose a great employee. But if you're in doubt, this is a personal little thing that I've done and it worked very well for me and my clients. You might want to select a candidate who has a so-called flaw, like they are older or they are overweight or they're not attractive. Those are things that could possibly limit their success in the marketplace, but it has little usually, not always, but little impact on job performance. So those employees are more likely to stay with you, which is what you want because you don't have to go through this again. Okay, in summary, whom you hire may be your most important work decision if you're in a position to hire somebody. Do take the time to do it wisely. We only have a minute or so, so I think what I want to do I want to take one more quick call? Okay, I can't help it. Okay, are you quick? Come on in. You're welcome to work with Marty Nemko. You have a quick question?
Yes, is that you, Marty?
It is.
Oh, God, I've been waiting so patiently. This is your fan, Leah Joseph. My question pertains to finding a job helping people to die by letting them grieve their past. Now, I know your mother's going to die soon, and we're going to have to wait till next week to answer it. I am so sorry about it, but you can help me a lot because I think I admire you more than anyone else I know in the Bay Area. We're so alike, but mainly you are unique, caring, and extremely intelligent. Your views of what the world of work does to enrich a person's life are very clear-eyed. So specifically, what part did your mother have? I know your dad was wonderful in raising you. Most saliently, what was special about her? Did she work outside the home? And what is her background?
Yeah.
Unlike, I hope, your father's. And Marty, I was going nuts to ask you this question.
Thank you. I have to say goodbye. I'm going to answer it quickly because I have to go.
Can we do it next week, Marty?
I'm going to answer it quickly now. She was a stay-at-home mom. She basically was the support person. She was, to be honest, she was a tough mom. She was very strict, and I'm not sure that really helped. She did love me and believed in me, and to that extent that, but she was frankly the opposite and is the, she was stay-at-home mom, very materialistic, kind of the opposite values. I must say, if I, you know, I always try to be as honest as I can possibly be. My mom was a source of stability, and that was basically what I have to thank her for. In any case, that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do three-minute workovers on callers. And what's it really like to be a sex surrogate? I'll talk with the ultimate one. She's Cheryl Cohen Green. She was the subject of the movie The Sessions. She's also the author of An Intimate Life, Sex, Love, and My Journey as a Surrogate Partner. Till next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.